Make lists, people. They will save your life. Seriously, writing, even on a pretend professional level like I do, can be a swamp full of quicksand, and that's before you throw the internet under your feet. You're going to have lots of things to do, so make lists. In any given week, I can have dozens of jobs to do. Writing jobs, well, writing-related jobs. Listen to my progress report later, you'll see why I make lists. Right now, I'm on holidays, I don't have to do anything. And I have even more time at my disposal, and yet sometimes I feel like I'm not getting anything done. I'm spinning my wheels, and that feeling, that itch in the back of my brain, it tells me to go make a list. Now, behind my desk, I have a master list. It tracks the 6 pitches I'm at varying levels of seriousness about, the 3 short stories I'm working, the 6 essays I need to look at, and then a waxing and waning list of other miscellanea, thought balloon scripts, weekly crisis articles, CBR reviews on a weekly basis. You know the drill. Now, if I look at that big list, I freak out. Obviously, I want to tackle those pitches, those big game tickets, right? Wrong. You don't just sit down and tackle a pitch, you caress aspects of a pitch, you seduce it, you hopefully get to third base with it. But that's what you need your daily lists for. Maybe write character bios or proof synopsis again, because there's a job you can never do enough of. You whittle down exactly what you're going to do with your day. You list them in order of importance or preference, and then you start working your way through them, one at a time. Emails are a list item. Make them a priority and set aside some time to get through them, then have it done, crossed off the list. You know, you've got to email artists, publishers, whoever you need. That's a job. That can be a job. That's fine. Now, research a script concept. That's a job. Sometimes you need to set aside some time to go and, you know, haunt the internet. Lunch? Well, we've all spoken about that on here before. That's a job, and sometimes we forget to do it. Put it on the list. You'll feel better for crossing it off. And then at the end of the day, you get this awesome little present of seeing all the progress you've made. It's fun. Trust me, guys. Make lists. Now, I have a list right in front of me now. It says I'm going to stop blathering and introduce the lads. You know, Curtis Weeb and Jeremy Holt, my amazing writerly compadres. We're then going to discuss our progress reports, where most likely Jeremy's going to steal the show. And then after that, we've got a great question from Facebook, and it's going to spark some serious debate, I think. And then wrapping that up means we'll discuss another aspect of our process, which will lead us into just shooting the breeze on a lighter topic, and we'll wrap it up with Kurt dropping some verbal bombs on everybody as we fade out to yet another fantastic song choice that this podcast is getting known for. Now that's my list for right now, so let's start crossing things off, and we'll all feel like we're getting more done that way. Lads, it's a fine, crisp 2012 day. How are we all?
Speechless.
Good. Yeah, speechless. I was waiting for Jeremy to go first because I always feel like I'm the one who answers right away, and I thought maybe he'd chime in. I'm really excited to do the podcast, but once again, Jeremy, come on.
I'm very excited. Lists are good because I'm realizing I don't have any, and I feel very unorganized right now.
Oh, yeah, you're naked without a list, man. You got to be careful.
Yeah.
You know, I did this Tuesday. I had my girlfriend help me with a list, and I wasn't a firm believer in them. She's like, you know what, just write something down. And she had to work the next day, and she's like, here, let's go through a list of things that you want to get done, and then tomorrow when I come back from work, we'll go over and see how you did. And there was something about not only about having it in front of me, knowing what I had to do, but also kind of like this, not an expectation, but I wanted to show her, like, I can do it. I'm a good writer. I'm a good worker. And it was like this. So I actually, that day, I had the list there, and I got a lot of stuff done. And then I'm like, you know what? That's good for Tuesday, but I don't really need to make a list. I didn't get anything else done this week. It was really, really annoying. But anyway, I actually really agree with you, and I'm going to try to stick to that. That's going to be one of my resolutions this year, is to start planning my weeks a few days ahead of time. So good intro.
Thanks, man. I hope some people have checked that off their little process listening list, and they can move on to the next section.
So Ryan, with your list, how far in advance do you make these lists, or do you just kind of add to them as you cross things off?
I usually have sort of like a 1 day list, and then if I'm sort of crushing it, maybe I'll add some more, or maybe I'll let it flow over to the next day. But sometimes I'll just start a new list, because once I've got all these things crossed off, they start to mess with me mentally. So usually once a day is a good idea, just to have a little tiny piece of paper and just to write down maybe 5 things I'd love to get done. And if I get past those 5 things, that's gravy. But there are some things I know I have to get done. But I find daily, and as I said, I've got that master list as well, which is ongoing for months at a time.
Oh, that's great. Okay, I guess we will move on to the wow factor, which is where we talk about something that is worth talking about that is not our own work. So I'm going to start because I usually lack in this discussion. So I'm actually not going to talk about a comic book today. I had a couple that I was thinking of, but I'm going to actually talk about a novel. I just recently gave in to reading Stieg Larsson's The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Now, the reason I was hesitant in reading this book was because in New York, there was some kind of ad campaign, some PR marketing thing where people were being paid to read this book in public places.
What? And
it was excessive. Like, you'd see seven people in the same subway car reading the book, or you'd see someone in the park, and it just turned me off. I was like, I'm not going to read that book ever. So two weeks ago, I was coming back from holidays in Florida, coming back to New York, and my flight got delayed 2 hours and then was canceled. So I got stuck in North Carolina, and I was waiting for a 5 a.m. flight. So it was like 3 a.m, and I see that book, and I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm going to read the prologue, see what this is all about. If the prologue doesn't grip me, I'm not buying it. I read the first page, and I bought it. And I read it in about 5 days, and then I went to go see the film today. And it's a really interesting experience to read a book, read a novel before you see the film, because I've actually never done that. And it Yeah, and it makes me – it opened my eyes to the way – how different mediums of writing are edited, like, and for good reason. You know, the book is paced in a very specific way that does not translate in the film. And the film, there were a lot of things, you know, re-edited or changed or completely omitted. And, you know, it was interesting. It was a really interesting experience alone, just having experienced reading it and then experienced watching it. So yeah, the book is, you know, just amazing. And it's, you know, that's my wow factor basically.
And so you saw the flick as well. So which did you prefer, the book or the flick?
I don't know, because I saw the film with my friend and he hadn't read the book. So I was asking him, I was like, did you feel that some of the big reveals were like satisfying? Did you feel that, you know, there was enough story being paced well enough to keep you engaged? He says, oh yeah. He's like, dude, the film was awesome. I was like, you know, I liked it too, but something about the book, because the book goes into a lot of detail about a lot of different things, and I feel like the film, the characters were a little bit more one-dimensional because of a time constraint, obviously. So I'd have to say I enjoyed the book more. I felt like the big reveals in the film were really abrupt, and there were some major changes made to some of the characters that, for me, it was actually kind of disorienting. I was watching this movie and I know these characters, but I'm like, wait, what? That just happened? Wait, that doesn't make sense. But that's not what happened in the book. So I just went along with it, and it is a great film. Like, it was enjoyable. You know, I love David Fincher, so, you know, he totally, it was satisfying in that regard. But yeah, I felt the film to be disorienting compared to the book. So I did enjoy, as a story aspect, I enjoyed the book a lot more.
Have you read the book, Kurt?
No, I haven't, and I originally wanted to see the Swedish version of the film.
Yeah.
And I heard from a few people that the rape scenes in there were brutal. I really have a hard time watching that kind of stuff. It really actually can ruin an entire movie for me, and it's almost like knowing that kind of stuff beforehand is worse for me, because I sit there just waiting nervously, like just waiting for it. You know, I watched The Proposition, Guy Pearce, John Hillcoat's movie, and I didn't know anything about the movie going in, and I watched it, and that scene at the end where I was like, oh God, but I wasn't ready for it. So it happened really quickly and I felt ill, but it was still like, okay, you know what? I wasn't expecting it. Well, yeah, I got past it. So.
Can you read, like, have you read a book where there's a rape scene in it?
Yeah.
Is it the same effect for you? You don't want to finish it?
Yeah, basically. And I don't know what it is. It happens in a lot of media, and we've talked a bit about it before. It's just something that it just doesn't sit well with me, you know. And I can watch, like, you know, horror movies with torture scenes and stuff. That doesn't really affect me that much. That one always just gets me. I still haven't really figured out why.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I will say about this is the character Elizabeth Salander is one of the most intriguing female characters I've ever read, and she's the type of person where bad things happen to her, but at no point is she a victim in the story, and even to herself. Like, there's very interesting passages in the book where she knows these things have happened to her, and yet she does not view herself as a victim in any way, because, you know, she accepts choices she's made and all these things. And it's a very unique perspective from this female character, given the fact that she's gone through some really horrible things. But she is very empowered by you know, how she takes action and how she gets retribution, but it's really, really good.
One thing I found interesting about that book, and I, to be honest, I've only read about the first 100 pages, and I just, it wasn't grabbing me at the time, so I moved on. But the thing I do find interesting is that the author, Stieg Larsson, he, I believe he passed away before even the first one was published.
Yeah, it was published posthumously.
And my brother asked me, would I accept those sort of sales if it meant me dying? And I very quickly said no. I wouldn't see the point of being an international literary superstar if I wasn't around for it, to be honest.
What's the point?
I thought it was a good question, but I just, I don't seek fame that badly that I'd be willing to disappear for it.
Sure.
I don't know. maybe others are different. I didn't ask my brother what he thought. I didn't want to know. He's a bit sick. All right, let's move on from that, Kurt. What's your wow factor for this week?
Ryan, I'm gonna take a shot. I'm gonna guess we have the same one this week.
Oh,
but we'll see. My pick for this week is Fatale.
No, I see clear of that.
Oh, okay, good. All right, so yeah, I picked Fatale, Brubaker and Phillips together again, doing kind of what they normally do. It's a very criminal style story, but of course the first issue especially was very subtle in the, I guess, the supernatural elements that they're going to be infusing into the story. And I liked it. I thought, you know, these guys work really well together. And that is something that has clearly been fostered from years and years of doing criminal and doing all incognito, all these different books. And I mean, the only thing that really could be drawn up as a complaint against it is that they all look the same, but it actually feels a lot different. It does feel like criminal, but there's a really subtle undertone that it's got a really good creep factor to it. And, you know, you get like a couple panels in the issue of some pretty intense gore, which we're not used to in criminal. A lot of the violence in criminal seems to happen off camera, and this, they're going a little bit different direction, but it's still subtle and it still just seems like a straight up crime story, but there's little hints of some kind of horrific legacy that has been left. And it looks like they're kind of building on, you know, the sins of the father and these types of storylines. And I'm really, really interested. I'm really intrigued. And I was pretty hesitant to give it a go. Because I was a little bit, because, you know, there was obviously, again, a lot of hype around it. And of course it is, you know, these two really awesome creators working together on a new project. But I just was a little bit hesitant, because I always find there's been a few projects where I've been really burned for like going into it, something that's been just hyped. But things like that happening with Image, like those hyped projects have been really good. You know, I was really hesitant about Witch Doctor. We've talked about that before, and that was my favorite book of 2011. So, yeah, I read it and I really liked it, and I'm definitely going to continue to follow it and put it on my pull list. And yeah, that was my wow factor.
It's a pretty good choice. I was a big fan of that, and even when Brubaker Phillips don't like knock it out of the park, they're still scoring runs. Like, you've got to give them that. They're always at least good, if not great.
Yeah, exactly. How about you? What was yours?
All right, my one is from, I think, about a week ago, and I'm not sure if I featured this series before, but if I have, I have to do it again. It's The Cape. It's from IDW, and it's based on a short story from Joe Hill. And now there's like this little 4-issue mini coming out about it, and it's basically this. It's the origin of a supervillain almost, well, not supervillain, but a villain. This guy whose childhood cape can allow him to fly. And he's a bit of a useless layabout, and he seems to be very untrusting, and he's possibly a sociopath. And his girlfriend broke up with him, and he's pretty sure that his girlfriend started sleeping with his brother. So he's killing people sort of that are involved. So the girlfriend, the brother, and his mother, unfortunately, saw him flying. And so now she's got a target on her head. And in the latest issue, issue 3, purely visual moment, there's a double page splash, which I'm not, as a writer, I'm not a big splash page writer, and I'm certainly not a massive double page splash writer, but this one was completely warranted. It's the guy floating up in the clouds. He's flying up there with it's like this ratty childhood cape. It's this ugly little thing. It's probably got snot and vomit all over it, and he's got it tied around his neck, and he's just sort of wearing jeans and a shirt, and he's up in the clouds flying, and he's holding this chainsaw, and flying toward him is this massive passenger jumbo jet. And it is it's a moment that really deserves you saying wow. And you can just kind of see what's about to come next, but just that scope, the double pages, the absurdity of some guy floating with a chainsaw in front of a plane, it's brilliant, and it works so well in the issue. It was just one of those things where I had to stop and, you know, recognize this comic just hit what I felt was a perfect beat. So that would be my wow factor for the week. Have you guys been reading The Cape at all?
I read the one shot when it came out.
Oh, yeah, that was like the sort of the very origin. That was pretty much the adaptation of the short story.
Yeah, I really liked it.
I haven't read it, but I've been hearing good things about it. So if you're going to give the recommend, I'll definitely check it out. I feel really lucky. Like, you guys have recommended a few books that I've been on the fence about, and I'm just like, oh, you know, you guys have read it, and I've been really pleasantly surprised. So, yeah, I'll definitely give it a go.
I think it would really, really work for you, Kurt. So, yeah, check it out if you can. I know it's on Comixology and a lot of stores are stocking the back issues. Now, I also wanted to make mention there was a title, Star Wars Agent of the Empire, Iron Eclipse, which is a terrible title because it's got, like, a stack of colons in there. But its byline was Stormtroopers of the Empire's Hammer, This Man is its Scalpel. And I thought that was the coolest pseudo-Bond dumb sort of tagline, but it totally works. Like, it's I love that. That was pretty cool. I sort of sat there and went, yeah, you're Star Wars, you can get away with that. I'll allow it. And the title's actually not too bad.
I didn't know you read Star Wars comics.
Hey, you make it sound like it's a bad thing.
That wasn't judgmental. This has never come up before. I followed what was it, Legacy? Was that the new one that's set in the future? Like the future Star Wars, like with like a descendant of Luke Skywalker, and he's a bounty hunter and stuff. I don't know. I think it was called Legacy. I followed that one for about 18 issues, and then I dropped it because I got bored.
Oh, that's a good recommendation.
That was not my wow factor.
I haven't read a lot of Star Wars comics, to be honest. I remember picking a few up back in the 90s, and I get a lot of preview copies through Dark Horse. So I've been reading a few different ones at the moment. Some of them aren't too bad. I certainly don't read them all, but Darth Vader and the Last Command, that was pretty decent. And this one, it's fun. It is. It's like a little Bond one. And Han Solo and Chewie turn up at the end of the first issue, and they have this little 4-page team up. It's kind of silly, but I don't know. There's something about it. It feels like it's good Star Wars. It feels like it's more based on the original trilogy instead of the prequels. Although, Kurt, you probably wouldn't have a stand on that because it's for nerds only, so don't worry about it.
Well, with that said, we'll move on to the progress report. This is where we update our listeners to the projects we've been working on and what we've been able to accomplish since our last show. Well, I'll start things off. And this holiday season, I had grand plans of celebrating the holidays while being, you know, away from home. I was away from home for about 10 days, but still managing to maintain a good, you know, at least try to do 10, 15 hours a week. And that did not happen whatsoever. I just could not find the time. And the time that I did manage to sneak away, the environment wasn't there. So I came back from my holidays just before New Year's, and I was feeling fairly overwhelmed. And I just needed to find a way to focus myself and kind of start 2012 with a bit of a fresh take. So I did a few things. And one of the things that I'm actually really excited about is I started a new blog. And yes. It's just my – I'll pimp it out here. It's just curtisweeb.wordpress. I think that's what it is, something like that, .com maybe. I should really look into that.
Okay.
You're a marketing mastermind.
I know. I'm tired, man. It's it's out there somewhere. I'm sure if you follow this
I'm pretty
podcast,
sure that is. I'm pretty sure that is the address, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, the idea with that was I was looking through my old blog that I started back in, I think it was 2008, and I found it really interesting to go back and read my posts about basically at the time in my career where I was just starting to put everything together. I was laying the foundation to start driving forward with my, you know, my pursuit of writing full time. And so it actually inspired me to, you know, I should start something new for 2012 that is going to chronicle from, you know, this year. And I've got a few comics in the bag, but, you know, things are just really starting for me. And I want to be able to kind of keep a log And also as a way, I've used the process as a way to, we've all talked about this, how it's a good point for us to focus, and progress report allows us to see what we've accomplished. And I want the blog to be that as well. And it's a few other things that I'm really excited about. I've done a few different segments on my blog already. It's only been up for about 4 days, and I've done a post a day. And I've done a few different features. One of the features is the short yarn, which is basically I'm just going to post a short story that I've written. I've got a stack of them on my hard drive that will never see the light of day anywhere else. So I think, you know, that'll be fun just to share my short stories. And the first one that I featured was a pretty grisly torture scene between two men. And it kind of goes in a direction maybe you're not expecting. And I was really happy with that one. And then I did another one, which was – I posted this one today. And I'm hoping that this is something that will help people see the pitch process for somebody who's already got a comic put out there. And basically what I posted today was the Intrepid's pitch synopsis. And it's the one that went into the actual pitch that I've talked about before. It's all the write-ups for the characters, the story summary, and you can see it all there. But anyway, I want to keep doing those as a means to, like, you know, show people what my process has been for getting pitches put together as far as sending to the publisher. So that was something that I've been working on this week. I did a bit of design. I tried to make it very simple, very accessible. And that took up, you know, a good chunk of my week just getting that ready. And then other than that, it's been really busy getting ready for Peter Panzerfaust, which comes out in just over a month, and getting some promo stuff done for that. Tyler's been really busy getting some promo stuff done, like pages, and he's got a lot of work to do. So I've just been trying to organize everything so that all he has to do is draw. And that's been coming along really nicely. We're pretty far into issue 2 already. And then the last thing is just getting all my other pitches lined up. I'm working with a guy named Andrew McLean, who I mentioned before. And he's finally been putting some pages together. He has been busy as well. And that is looking really awesome. And the last thing I got today as my final part of the progress report, I got the cover for my new series with Riley Rossmo, which hasn't been announced yet. It's going to be coming out in July. And it is totally different than anything else we've worked on together before. Green Wake is dark and gritty. This is going to be like a high action adventure. Colorful. It's totally – people are going to be really surprised when they see the cover for it. So that came in today, and I'm really, really excited about that project. So just gearing up for a new year, I guess, getting all my stuff together so that I can have a lot of material coming up 2012.
Now, Kurt, I have a few questions, if you don't mind answering them.
Yeah.
That series with Riley Rossmo, I saw that was mentioned on your website. What can you give us any details on it, or does that have to wait?
Well, yeah, I can talk. I did mention, if you look at my, I forgot to take it off, but I'm just going to.
Yeah, that's where I saw it originally.
Yeah, it is called Debris, and yes. The basic concept is. I guess the way to visualize it would be, and this is again a movie pitch, I apologize. It's Red Sonja fighting Transformers.
Red Sonja fighting Transformers.
That's the basic, the visual idea.
Can we edit the sound of like money over that? Of just like a checkout going cha-ching. I like it a lot.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's basically, Riley and I had talked about when we started putting this new project together, one of the things that, I mean, I'm not going to lie, Green Wake didn't sell very well. It sold well to start off with, and sales started to trail down, and got to basically a point where it's like, you know, we didn't really know what more we could do to try to increase the sales. We've done a lot of marketing, and what it came down to is just realization that we were really in a small market with the comic, and the people that like it love it, which is awesome, which is great. But we can't live off of the adoration of fans as much as I'd love to be able to. We actually need to get paid, and the sales were going down. And so we looked at it as like we've pitched as Twin Peaks and Dark City in a comic book form. Well, those are both pretty cult movies and TV shows to begin with. And then you're narrowing the market by being a comic book. So we wanted to do something that is a lot more accessible and something that we can explain a lot easier. I mean, I've never, in the entire time I've been doing Green Wake, ever been able to tell someone in one sentence what it is. it's impossible. It's like, it's, I found it really difficult. So we were looking for something that would be like, this is exactly what it's about. One sentence, there you go. So that was the idea behind it. I mean, we had a few ideas already, but this is something that came about because of that, I guess, philosophy about making a more accessible story.
So am I led to believe that Debris will be taking the place of Green Wake in your publishing schedule?
Good question.
I ask the hard questions, Kurt. I ask them all the time.
Yeah, it hasn't been announced yet, so I guess this is kind of the first I'll be saying about it. As far as I know, Green Wake will be done with number 10. And
can you send me some extra scripts or something? I'm going to need some extra fixes after 10, man. It sucks. Well,
yeah, it's frustrating. And it is a reality. I mean, that is part of the progress of the last few weeks. Our numbers were really bad for issue, I think it was issue 8 or 9. And Jim basically said, we need to make a decision here, guys. And the truth is that, you know, for issues 8 through 10, Riley's going to be making, you know, he can't live on it. He could not live on the money he's going to be making. And it's his job. It's not like, for me, it's a little bit different because I can have 3 or 4 projects going at the same time. But for Riley, it's his job. He does that. It takes a full month for him to do it. Yeah. And it's not, he can't just do that and then 2 other books at the same time. He has to commit his time to it. So, we had to come to that decision. It was a decision that Riley and I came to together, but it was hard. We talked for 2 hours over Skype about it, and there was a few options. There was one option where we just continue with number 10, just go as normal and say we're going to put it on hiatus until we figure things out. But the reality is that we promised from day one to tell what Green Wake was about.
Yeah.
And if we were to put it on hiatus, there's a good chance it never would come back, and we would have not held up our end of the bargain that we promised fans. So issue 10 is going to be a little bit longer than most issues. I got permission from Jim to do, I think it was an additional 6 pages. So there's a lot happening in issue 10, but we do reveal it. We do tell everything that happens in Green Wake and like what, you know, who started it, what it's about. So there is resolution, but unfortunately we weren't given the full time we needed. So it's not going to be quite as satisfying, at least on my end anyway. I hope the fans still really appreciate it and still like it.
That's where I just don't get this industry sometimes. I mean, that I saw that book on a lot of top 10 lists. I mean, it was made the top 50 books of the year on CBR. It was, as you said, like those who liked it loved it. And I guess some people dropped off maybe after a few issues, but
well, it's not that different.
Harder and harder to survive.
I mean, it's not that different than the actual show Twin Peaks, which was back in the day, it was huge. It was like a sensation. And then I mean, granted, it ended for different reasons, but, you know, it's still, yeah, I mean, like Curtis said, reviewers can love it, but if people aren't actually buying it, which, you know, people, I guess, don't realize there's a disconnect between people talking about it and writing reviews for it and people who need to be buying it to keep the book going. Because, you know, there's a lot of people that will wait for a trade of a series, but, you know, a lot of novice comic book readers don't know or even realize that if you don't pick up the singles, they'll never be a trade. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. But it is what it is, and I'm not going to complain because Green Wake has opened a lot of doors for me, and I'm so proud of that series, and I always will be, and I'll definitely always look back on it favorably. And it's allowed me to do a lot more projects this year. So it's definitely, I feel it's done what it's needed to for my career so far. So
you used it and abused it. Nice work. and that just means the script I wrote for it is now never going to see the light of day.
I know.
I love my idea that I had too. I loved it. It's a shame.
Balls. We're out in the cold now, Jeremy. We're never going to make it. Unless you and I do like a Kickstarter and people pay to see it made. Oh, I like that.
I
don't know whether Jim would allow us to do that, but I'll change it to Blue Wake or something, whatever. It's my idea now. All right, I want to go next because I don't want to have to follow Jeremy after his progress report. So, because I think he's got the better news than I. So I'll drop what I've done. Is that all right with you, Jeremy?
Yeah, go ahead.
Fantastic. You're a gentleman. I've got a few things on here, so I'll rattle through them. The Beginnings Anthology that the Canberra crew and I had put up on Indiegogo has got about 14 or 13 days left of fundraising to go. We asked for $2,000, and we're really close to $4,000. So not only has it been a raging success, and Indiegogo put it as one of the best comic campaigns of 2011, but it's just astounding most of the people put their money in for pre-orders. We're really happy with that. It also helped that Scott Snyder did a script critique for us, and we put that up for $250, and it sold in the first, I think it was 60 seconds. So he's a legend for that, and as soon as it sold, he sent me an email and said, you know, I'll do another one if you want, if it'll help. And I thought that was above and beyond, and I spent a few emails trying to talk him out of it because it's a lot of work, but he was pretty adamant. So we ended up selling two of his script critiques for a total of $500. So that certainly helps getting us close to $4,000. But I really want to hit $4,000. So we've got about $120 to go, and I'm pretty sure over the next 2 weeks we'll make it. So that's good, 200% funded. I was on the radio at the start of this week, Australian National Radio, doing an interview about it. And yeah, we're hoping to, we've got about just under 4 weeks for all the artists to get their work in, and we will print in a bit over a month, which will be really exciting. So I'm hoping to hit a few Australian cons and start spruking it around. And my story, I've submitted mine, and my artist, Emma, she's drawn all the pages and she's in the thick of coloring it. I think she just finished coloring page 8 out of 10. So we're pretty much done, and we've kept a schedule, which I'm really stoked with. So that has taken up a bit of time over the last few weeks. Kurt, you've been nice enough to greenlight my script for a Grim Leaper short story, which I thank you for.
And no problem. Good.
Let's hope Grim Leaper makes it to that issue so I can see publication. Not the kiss of death or anything. Don't take it wrong. But yeah, so I've got my my 5-page script. It was hard to sort of fit everything in, but I think I did it, and hopefully Kurt obviously did as well. And so I'm off with the artist, Daniel Logan, and he's already sent me the thumbnails for the 5 pages, and they look really good. The guy is the Phillips to my Brubaker. I absolutely love his art, and he's really good at hitting timelines. So he's working on the pages as we speak, and I can't wait to see how they come out. I think there's the premise basically is that it's a guy who gets trapped in love by a girl because she's basically able to use food to almost trick him into feeling love, the way that food can set off chemical reactions within you. And so at the end, he's got a nice reversal twist to it, and things, obviously I've written it, so obviously things get dark and quite strange. And this last page, I can't wait to see him draw it. So if he's listening to this right now, I hope he's drawing while doing it. We can only hope. I've also really excitingly managed to line up one of my favorite colorists working today, and I'm going to be a prick and not actually name the person because we still need to finalize that our timelines will align, but I'm really stoked to get this person coloring these pages once they come through. So that project is looking really, really good, and basically I can sort of sit that to the side because I've done all I can do. I just need to start approving thumbnails and things like that. So that's a nice job that's not too time consumptive. There's a comic company out there, Action Lab Entertainment. Mm-hmm. I've been chatting with them. They've been wanting me to pitch to them for some time, and I'm on pretty good speaking terms with Dave Duanch, who's a head sort of honcho over there. And there's an old pitch that I had called Fate, which is about a guy who wakes up in the hospital with sort of amnesia, and it turns out he's like the world's biggest villain. And so things ripple out from there where people are trying to kill him, and he's not even sure if he really should stay alive in case the amnesia wears off and he goes back to his old ways. And it's a really good pitch I put together with Justin Greenwood a few years back. And so I sent that through to Action Lab, and they like it, but they're not sure whether it'll fit their publishing schedule. So we've been going back and forth on emails, but it's just good to have an open direct line with a good publisher like that. They're really top people, and they're putting out some good products. So, yeah, I'm not so much writing for them at the moment as just sort of tweaking things and really trying to break down through email what we can possibly do, but I've got high hopes there. Another publisher, which is Orangutan Comics, which is in the UK, they're publishing a short story of mine in February in their anthology Faster Than Light, and I just submitted another 8-page short story to them, the script at least. So hopefully I'll hear back at some stage soon as to whether they want to go ahead with that as well. They recently just published Hypergirl, which was a book that got pretty decent press through Comixology. They featured it digitally. It was on the front page. It won a Comixology award for best digital debut, I think. That and The Strange Tale of Luther Strode were equal prize winners in that category. So they're a good little publisher, and there's some really good people there. David Wynn is one that I talk to a lot on Twitter. He's a fantastic artist. He drew Hypergirl, and he's the editor of Faster Than Light. So I'm hoping this eight-page story will tickle his fancy again, and I can maybe get published there. And I'm also working on another 10-page crime short story, which was an idea I had way back in 2000. And I wrote it on like three Post-its, and I put it in my wallet. And it's been in my wallet ever since. And I keep sort of looking at it, and I never knew really what to do with it. And I was looking at it again recently, and I realized it'd be a perfect short story, a short comic story. So I broke it down into pages, and I've crushed it into 10 different pages, and I just need to find some time now to sit down and actually script those pages. But once they get done, I'll probably send them into Dave at Faster Than Light as well. So there's been some good movement on some short story front, and I'm just sort of – pitches seem to take so long to assemble. You've got to have this whole story arc. You've got to bring together all these characters and backstories and what's going to happen to them and their arcs, and you've got to get the artist to come through with all these different things. And I'm finding with a short story, it's obviously shorter reward in the end. You're not going to make as much money or get as much exposure, but you're getting something out there. And I think it's a really smart idea to have a few little things that will hopefully get you noticed. So I've been really sort of trying to keep a good like 20% of the back of my brain just stewing on little things like that that I can maybe send through. I put together I put together another pitch for a different comic, for a graphic novel. I'm going to call it Last Lights, and it's basically going to be the last moments of a man's life, but all the last moments of his life. So not the actual end of his life, but the last time he saw a specific girlfriend, or the last time he saw his father, or the last time he was a virgin. And so that should be a fun little few pages. And so the book would just be all these little vignettes of these lasts of a man's life. And it sort of feels something like Day Tripper, but I don't know. I'm trying to work out whether I need to have like a through line for the story, or whether I know I want the timeline to be fractured completely. So you'll see, I mean, at some stage in the book, you'll see him die and have his last moments of life, but I want to see all sorts of crazy other last moments. So I drew that up, and I wrote five spec pages for them, and I sent them off to an artist mate of mine in Canberra, Sam, who he's been putting together some really good sequential work, and we've always spoken about the need to work together and collaborate. So I sent this through to him, and he's going to try and find a week soon in January to read through it and see if it's the sort of thing he wants to work on. So a little something different from me, but that's good, I guess. I don't want to start off typecast before I've even been published. The last two things, so I am wrapping up, I swear. The Daredevil anthology of essays that I am putting together is trucking along really well. Last time I spoke about it, I was halfway through my second essay, and I'm happy to say now I've finished both of my essays. I've had four different essays handed in to me by contributors, and I've edited two of them, I believe, and they're two more halfway edited. I like to sort of sit down and read through it, and then go through and make notes, and then go through later and make notes again on the essay, grammatical as well as just structural. So it's coming along really well. The essays that I've read are fantastic. They're phenomenal. I'm really happy with the contributors that we've got lined up on this book. So far we'd be looking at, I've probably read, let's say, close to 40,000 words on this book, and it's looking like if you're a Daredevil fan, this book will be perfect for you, I can absolutely guarantee. So I'm happy with that timeline of things coming along. And the last thing I did was actually in the last few days was a novel that I have previously written, and I've spoken about it on here before, about a guy who wakes up one day and his every thought and feeling and moment of his life is on a website. And it's basically like little blog entries, and it's things only he should know. I'm in talks with that novel with a small publisher in the States as to whether they would care to publish it. And I've sent through the pitch idea, and they loved it. They absolutely loved the concept, and they think it's really got legs. And so now I've sent through the chapters. So maybe they love the idea and they think my writing's a big bag of balls. I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
But we love the idea. We'll take it from you, but can we just hire somebody else to write it?
We'd like someone with talent to take it further. So thanks, yeah. So we'll wait and see. They I sent the chapters through, I think, about 2 days ago. So yeah, it's just sort of, I've got these novels sitting around. I wouldn't mind doing something with them, and that's something that I'm sort of going to look to a bit in 2012. So there's anthology work for the last few weeks. There's short story work. There's new pictures. There's essays, non-fic, and there's novels. So I've been exercising all the different crevices of my brain, and it's been pretty good, I must admit.
You've been busy.
Yeah.
I try and not celebrate Christmas and enjoy festive times with my family. I try.
Good man.
Yeah, the wife loves me for it. All right, now the progress report we've all been waiting for, Jeremy. Drop it.
Okay, so I have a few things that I guess I'll just briefly talk about them. The most progress I've seen so far is a series called Primordial that I'm writing, which is basically a 1940s New York period piece focusing on the city's first criminal profiler. The artist, Isaac Goodhart, has sent me 6 of the 10 pages that we're doing for the pitch. I wanted to do 5 pages, but he wanted to feature the first murder scene, which he was very excited about. So I said, well, if we do that, it has to end on page 10 to leave it on a good beat. So he's willing to do 10 pages. So he sent me a mixture of final pencils and some final inks of 6 of them, and they look amazing. So that's really exciting, and hopefully I'm going to have that ready for Emerald City Comic Con at the end of March. The next thing is Hobo Code, which is a story that blends the survivalism of Fight Club with the revenge story of Gladiator set amongst the homeless population. The artist, Aiden Mountford, is working on character sketches now. We want to have that actually ready for Image Expo at the end of February. Also, I was able to, I was offered a spot with Curtis for his Grim Leaper series to write a short story, and Aiden, the artist on Hobo Code, is actually doing the art for that as well, and I actually wrote the first draft of the script, which is good, so I need to send that off once I revise it a bit to him. Other than that, my Twin Peaks meets Toy Story idea is going to start work probably this week, hopefully. I'm sending the artist, Selena Golding, the final material she needs, which is character sheets and some more reference images. The project with this image artist is still going, but his schedule is actually getting tied up, so the scheduling is being juggled a bit, so that's kind of being put on the back burner for a bit. Death Tax, my first graphic novel, is still slated to come out late this year, I do believe. The artist, J.C. Grand, is starting on issue 2 this week, so I'll start seeing some of those pages soon. And I guess the biggest thing is Sleepwalker, which is a pitch I had ready for Fan Expo last year, and I submitted at New York Comic Con, actually got greenlit through a small press publisher, Juxtaposed Publishing, out of Chicago. They're startup publishers, so they're still getting themselves off the ground, but they have a really great delivery system, which is going to be 5 titles to start. Each title is going to have its own website, which they're going to design, maintain, and update. And they're going to basically put 4 issues each of each series with 24 pages apiece, 2 pages uploaded a week until each issue is done. Depending on site traffic, they may print those as single issues. If not, they might just hold off and print it as a whole trade. Which is, I think, a really cool idea, considering that Twitter and Facebook, it's very easy to get people to look at your work. The audience is much more accessible that way. So I don't really have to depend on pre-orders and everything, which, you know, hopefully one day I'll have a series out through Image or Oni or whatever. But other than that, I have 2 other projects that I'm developing with 2 artists, so those are still really early. But one of them is this series Lineage, which is basically blending, let me think about how to describe this. It's basically blends the family drama of The Incredibles and injects the dark reality of Watchmen. So it's basically about a senior citizen who's sitting in his retirement home, and he's watching the news, and he's watching this superhero who's basically known to be immortal saving, you know, the city, and except he's watching the superhero not do super things. Like, he's more of a reality star. Like, he's into TV and wealth, and he cares nothing about world peace. And the secret is that he's aligned. There's a lineage of supermen that have been basically protecting the city, but what people don't know is that they're not actually immortal. So it's basically this father-son story of you know, a father watching his son do things that he doesn't align with and he doesn't agree with, and it's a generational gap. So it's just about him making things right, and it's kind of an old man doing, you know, one last ditch effort to set a good example for his son. So
that sounds awesome, man. That's a really good idea.
It's still really early. Kevin Ziegler, who's a very good friend of Trad Moore's, they went to college together. I pitched to him, so he's actually working on some character sketches. But I just wanted this. I thought it'd be cool to have this story about a superhero or a retired superhero seeing what he built kind of get destroyed. Basically, it's like watching an overprivileged child stomp on your sandcastle after you've built it or something. So that's the idea of, just family dynamics, because I think we all know what that's like.
Too much.
So.
Nice. Congrats, good work, Jeremy.
Congrats on all that. That's awesome. And I'm really proud of that, of your publication with, is it Lucid or Sleepwalker again?
The title is actually Lucid Proof, which is the final title.
Okay, cool. It looks awesome, man. And the art, reimagined art that Vic went with, it looks so good. The colors look really great. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I got to give props to Vic for going back over those pages, because he hated the original pages. And Pelle Schmidt, who's the writer-artist of Devil's Concubine through IDW, is attached to the colors, and he's done a great job. Scott Forbes is doing all the covers, which him and I have been talking about for issue 2. And Ed Burson obviously is doing the letters, because he's amazing.
Awesome.
So are you guys busting your ass getting pages done now? Like, when do you have to start submitting stuff?
We submitted the first page. Vic is sending more pages, I think, in the next week or two. Their schedule is a little ways off. I think that they want us to have a first issue done by, I think, March 15th. So, yeah, there's time, which is not a big deal. But I'd ideally like to have, a lot of it done. But there's time.
Well, congrats, man. It's a big step, and it's all about having those little publications, and you can hand those, get them into editors' hands, and it's only going to get your name out there further. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, the last thing before we move on, Southern Dog, which is a pitch that I put on my blog that failed because I haven't heard back from anyone. That actually got a lot of coverage on Twitter for a little bit, for like a day or two. And there's actually two publishers that I'm not going to name that actually reached out to me about it. So I'm going to see if that might actually go somewhere. But the power of Twitter.
Yeah, no doubt. That's awesome. You'll have to tell us after the show.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. Cool. All right, let's move on to Grillem, because I know we're going to start running out of time otherwise. This was a question on Facebook from Ben Christian. It was one that I instantly was really I'm intrigued to see what we all come up with, and I hope we don't all instantly agree. But the question is, DC or Marvel calling you up? They want you for a regular monthly gig. That's right, regular monthly gig, and I like that he put the word gig as well. The problem, it's for a character you care less about. So do you roll up your sleeves and attack the gig, finding something redeeming and interesting about the character, or do you turn down the assignment down, opting to pass rather than phone in a potentially weak script? What do you guys say?
Well, I mean, it's one of these things where, you know, I guess it depends on where you are in your career as well. If you've been writing for Marvel, for a year or something like that, I think you have the ability to say, eh. But if it's like your first gig and they're like, we want you to do this title, we want to put it on you monthly, I don't think you can really say no. But I guess that's not the question. The question is, you know, the extenuating circumstances don't really matter. My personal spin on this is based on what Jonathan Hickman said at a panel that I was on with him, which was basically he is going to write the story as though it's his story. He's going to make the characters his characters. And I think you can do that to a certain degree. I think you can put a voice to the characters that is your own. And I kind of had that experience with my Marvel piece, the Logan's Lost Lesson. I mean, I wouldn't say that was my my choice to of all the characters I could do. Like, I gave them all these different options. That's the one they wanted me to do. It wasn't my first choice. But I really you know, I got in a chance to read Jason Aaron's scripts, and I saw the kind of tone that he was going for, and I had fun with it because I made it my own, and I infused my own kind of sense of humor and my own storytelling. And I think if you attack it from that perspective, where you are going to still use your voice and have fun with it any way you would doing your own projects, then I think, yeah, I don't see why you couldn't take characters that you really don't care about and still make them fun.
I think it says a lot to, I think, Curtis, you make a good point about the reality of the situation. Like, if you are writing for Marvel, you could easily say no. But at the same time, if you are, it would be a great writing exercise, and it could, you know, show some range. Like, okay, maybe this isn't what you want to do, but it would be an opportunity to maybe take that character in a direction that you couldn't take the characters you're currently writing for because they're already stuck in some storyline. And then from the standpoint of someone who's never been published, the same thing applies. You could have a chance to really write your voice and your sensibilities into a character. And I mean, I think it would be fun to do a little research. I mean, that's the type of person I am, is to research something and then write what I can about it. I think someone who says no is just taking the easy way out and just wants to play it safe or play it comfortable.
Interesting viewpoints, lads. See if I can carve them in twain. Probably not. I think the extenuating circumstances do matter to a degree. Like, if it's someone like me who isn't being published and Marvel said, here you go, you don't really want to turn that down. But I agree sort of with what Jeremy says, research it. And I'd spend a weekend where I lived and breathed that character or that title, and I would work it out. However, if after researching it and really trying to break some story, I found that I was either getting nothing or crap, I would feel personally obliged to turn it down, purely because if this is my first work, that's what people are going to see of me. That's what is hopefully going to be a calling card to get me further work. And if it's crap, that's anti-work. That's actually stopping editors from calling you. So I think what it comes down to is, hopefully they don't just ring you up and they go, hey, we've got a proposition and you have 10 seconds to answer it. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. And to start freaking you out. Hopefully they're like, all right, it's Friday. Get back to us on Monday as to whether you would like to, well, either accept it. But I guess the reality is they would say, if you want to pitch for it, because that's generally how things seem to work. And if after a weekend I couldn't, I don't think I would want to fly blind and just sort of throw in some half-assed story idea, or even if they had given you carte blanche to do it, and just start writing hand to mouth and realize that you're turning out absolute dreck, because I guess that could really hurt your career if that's your kickstart and it's not great. Really worry about that.
Yeah,
that's a really good point, and I never actually thought about that. I have to be honest, they picked the story synopsis that I came up with. I had a cast of characters that I had in mind that I felt I could write, and they actually said to me after, you know, I'd given them the pitch and they picked it, they said, actually, we like it, but we want to take out all of these characters and we want to replace them with all of these ones. And I'll be honest, I hadn't heard of a single one. And the funniest part about that is, and I don't know if I talked about this in the podcast before, but when the art started coming in for the series, or for the short, I looked at one of the pages and I'm like, why the hell doesn't that guy have arms? The artist forgot to draw him in. The character didn't have arms. Like, why is he playing hockey? And it's like, so I mean, I can agree with the sentiment that I actually, when they got me to write those characters, like, I did research them. But I mean, there's only so much that you can do just like online, and there would have been so much back matter that I would have had to read for those specific characters. I just didn't have the time.
Yeah,
and I definitely felt overwhelmed, and I mean I shared with you guys quite honestly a few times, you know, before we recorded the show, I was concerned that, you know, I wouldn't be able to pull it off because I didn't know, you know, I didn't have the characters' voices, and even some of those characters were brand new from Jason Aaron's run on Wolverine and the X-Men, which they hadn't been introduced yet. So yeah, it was. I would agree with you, and I think I was lucky that I had a chance to read Jason Aaron's scripts to get a voice for those newer characters. If I hadn't had that, I actually probably would have had to say, "Look, I'm willing to do this, but I don't know anything about these characters. Can you, you know, can you allow me to work with these ones and see if they'd be willing to negotiate on that. And I suspect, and this is something I'll add to it, Jim Valentino, he told me that, you know, if Marvel or DC approaches you, and this was in context of, you know, making sure that you don't overbook yourself with your independent projects and with working with the big two. He said, if they approach you and they give you an offer, they're doing that because they're interested. And if you are too busy, just say, you know what, I can't right now. I'm too busy, but I'm interested. They will come back to you because that was the reason they approached you to begin with. And I think that would actually be applicable for, you know, taking this kind of work as well. Just be like, you know what, I don't know anything about this character. I'll try to research it, see what I come up with, but, you know, I need time to get back to you. Now, I think that would be okay, because if they've approached you, then they're interested.
Oh, yeah, they should come back again, one would think, if they are interested. And they should respect that. If rather than you just saying, oh, yeah, jump at the chance and you write some piece of crap, that doesn't help Marvel either, having some garbage issue or story arc or whatever out there. They should be thankful that you didn't just half-ass something out the back door for them, but that when you work for them, you're going to commit your effort and your time and your talent to producing them the best quality as you do your own creator-owned stuff.
Okay, so I guess we'll move on to the process. I think we covered that question quite well for Ben. The mm-hmm. process today is talking about dialogue. So, yeah, who wants to go first?
Well, I guess the topic we want to broach just a little about our maybe our, how we actually go about writing our dialogue. And we've actually had some really great guests on the show that have talked about the way they use their dialogue and how they actually incorporate it into their scripts. And from those conversations, I've been trying a few of those different methods to, and I've actually been finding that I've been using a mix of all those different types now, depending on the situation. A few of the examples are, I believe it was Joe Casey, who he says he writes the dialogue after, right? He actually goes through, he writes his script, gets the scene set, and then he goes in after and adds the dialogue based on how, you know, the scene feels to him. And then there was Scott Snyder, who he writes the dialogue before. Was it Scott Snyder who said he writes the dialogue beforehand and then adds it to the scene later?
Yeah, he'll write out pages of dialogue and he'll just kind of cut and paste pieces of conversations he feels fits best in the descriptions.
Yeah, so I've actually been doing a mix of that within the same script, and I, especially with the last few issues of Green Wake, where I felt that the imagery was way more important than the dialogue. I think actually most of issue 10 was written in that way. I would fully write out a full sequence, 2 to 3 pages, just the scene, and then I would go back and just add the captions over top. And I found that worked really, really well for scenes that absolutely relied on the imagery and less so than the words inside of it. So I've actually incorporated that into my writing, and where I need to allow the artist to just kind of go nuts and just allow him to take care of the scene and me just to, I guess, sprinkle it with just little bits of narrative to flesh out what needs to be fleshed out.
Yeah, I do the same thing as with what Joe Casey had recommended, because I mentioned to him during that episode about getting, you know, I felt really slow with some of my scripts because I got so hung up on dialogue. And, you know, when I know that Curtis can write a full issue in a day, I just think, what the hell am I doing wrong? So his process of that is actually really helpful because it makes me focus on kind of like how we started the show, making a list. And it's kind of a pseudo list of let me focus on the layouts of the page and describe those accurately so the artist wouldn't need any more than these pages to draw it. And, you know, the dialogue can wait. Obviously, I'll jot stuff down if it comes to me, but I'm trying to save that to the end. And I did that with the short story for Grim Leaper, and I found that I was able to write the first draft on a horrible flight from New York to Miami, and I was impressed that I was able to get those ideas out, but it's because I focused on one thing at a time. So I've been trying that, which has been really great.
I like that idea that we're learning from others. I think that makes a big difference, that you're thinking about what style is going to work for you or what style is needed for specific either projects or even just scenes, and really trapping those elements down. I always find dialogue is the thing. I just bloat it out on the page and then I trim excessively later, and I only want things to come out of characters' mouths that are really kind of necessary. And if they're talking blather, if there's no real point to it and it's not going to help anything, even if it's not helping set up character or anything like that, I start to trim it and I look at specific lines that they're saying and I sort of say, can I tighten what they're saying so that it's not, they're not taking forever to get around to what they mean to say? And unless that's a character tick where there's somebody who just waffles on, really trying to make sure that you earn every word that goes down on the page, because I don't know, you can sort of, you can fill pages up with expositionary dialogue sometimes that maybe could be expressed a little better other times. And sometimes you really need to realize that no dialogue will be just as powerful. Like give, one of my short stories, Ed Brisson wanted to have a look at it and he sent back some notes and a few of the, I think twice he made the note that maybe some silent panels here would really help to pace and beat it out. And it's true. Sometimes you need that sort of contemplative silence in between the dialogue to show either characters thinking about what's being said or thinking about what they will say next. And that's, I find that's something that comes through revising the dialogue. It's very rare that I'll get that down in the first pass of the first draft. It's something you really need to sort of, once you've finished the page, stand back and look at how that page will feel and how it's structured and just sort of say, all right, where do I really need my words and where do we need some pauses and do the characters need to be saying everything that's there? Do you guys write different sort of, I don't want to say sort of accents, but different ways of speaking?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I do. And that's actually one of the things that I'm Peter Panzerfaust is one area where I really had to make a decision about how I was going to represent accents. And because the cast of characters, there's a French kids, an American, and then there's going to be British people later on. And one of the things that I remember when Beautiful Creatures came out, this one reviewer, basically, I think he probably would have killed me if he had the opportunity. He hated the book so much. he made this joke about one of the characters was from France. And I mean, I'll openly admit, I mean, it was my first book, so I had a lot to learn. But I actually tried to write a French accent. It was terrible.
Oh.
Yeah, it was like, and he's like, he was so mad about that. Like, it just, he hated it. And from then on, I just like, you know what, it's all about maybe just peppering it with certain phrases. But I've read a lot of, you know, different, I guess, thoughts on the idea of writing accents. And the general consensus is, just write the character and yep, make it clear that they're a French person by, you know, maybe their point of reference or, you know, maybe some of their expressions that they say, but just write it. Don't write the accent out phonetically. Just you know, make the character that ethnicity. So I've been doing that and I've been watching a lot of British movies lately and British TV shows to just pick up on a lot of the slang, which is where you're going to get a lot of that from. So, yeah, I mean, and then that's really helped in establishing different voices for different characters. I really tried to make that more so in Green Wake with Esther. I tried to write her in a different way. Like she uses a bit more, her words are a bit sharper and she talks a bit faster. Whereas I tried to make Morley more of a slow talker. Like he's more contemplative with the words that he uses. But that's something that I only really recently started doing in the last year. I've really had to focus on trying to learn how to do that.
So I find it's easier just to get the artist to, if they draw the character in a black and white horizontally striped shirt and have a baguette in the basket of their bicycle, we're going to know they're French, because I don't want to have to write oh ho ho because I don't know how to spell it. So
yeah.
There are ways around that with the dialogue. But, yeah, I do. I find, like, writing a patois for somebody is they're going to end up sounding like Gambit from the old X-Men. And it's you're going to end up cringing to some degree. Whereas, yeah, if you can drop in some sort of authentic slang, that'll work to a degree. And as long as you don't overdo it to some degree, it should hopefully work out. And if, in the end, the accent doesn't play with every word coming out of their mouth, I don't think that will detract from the comic. Whereas if you're constantly cropping letters and apostrophes everywhere and umlauts above everything, I think that will impact the comic and not in a positive way. So it's probably, I guess it's safer to err on the side of caution.
That's a really interesting point, because death tax is set in Texas, and there's a celebrity pastor that's one of the main characters, and he has this very thick Southern drawl, and I specifically wrote that that way. So it forces you to, like, when you're reading a script or when you're reading a comic, and if someone says something differently, I find myself actually sometimes saying out loud or even like mouthing the words when I'm reading it. And that's what I've done with this one celebrity pastor. So I wonder if it's going to be okay. But I was very meticulous about it, so I think it does work, but we'll see.
All right. Yeah, I mean, have you guys been reading Spaceman from Azzarello and Russo?
Oh, yeah, that's a perfect example.
Yeah, that's I find that is a hard comic to read, and it's effective in some regards, but I just find it's slowing me down. And I mean, they've just dropped the third issue, and I think I'm finally getting a feel for it, where I can just sort of flow along. And you can pick everything that they're saying up through context, but it's something you almost need to stop and consciously, overtly learn within the first two issues. I mean, have you guys been reading it?
I read the first one, and I found that very distracting. And I know it's been getting good reviews, and I have the same problem with 100 Bullets, where there were certain characters that talked in a lot of, I don't know, they talked in a very different language, and I had to really push through it. But this is even harder, because there's not a lot of cultural context to it. It's futuristic, so we're learning this. It's brand new.
I'm pretty sure you were about to say it's even worse, and then you edited yourself. That was awesome. People out there in podcast land will be able to slow that down and hear it. Sorry, that's just me picking up on your dialogue.
Well, we should probably move on to the next one, because we're almost at the end here. We've got 8 minutes left, so let's just quickly move on to the roundtable. And we kind of did a last minute change here, so hopefully you guys have had a little time to think about it. It's 2012 resolutions. What goals have we set for our writing careers in this, the final year of humanity's existence? I'll start off. I came up with three. The first one is to maintain a regular working schedule. And your intro, Ryan, was perfect, because I know now that I need to actually start prioritizing and making lists. One of the problems that I've been having is that my work is really sporadic, and when it's on, I can be super productive, but there are days that will go by that I cannot focus, and then I'm so overwhelmed by my, the umbrella of things that I have to do that it stagnates me. So that is definitely something that's going to come into play here. The next one is to make new connections for writing work outside the comic industry. I've actually got a lot of good work from my writing in comics, that's helped me quit my day job so that I can, write full time. And I want to make, a bigger splash as far as making a lot of connections and being able to line up work for, 2-3 months in advance, so I'm not working month to month, which is kind of where things are at right now. And the last thing that I want as a resolution is to continue to foster a focus on independent comics and make myself available to other passionate writers and artists looking for advice or critique. And that has actually been something that I've been loving about my career so far, is the connection with other indie creators, and not only people that are published, but people that are constantly putting together pitches and always striving to maintain their craft and make it better. And I'm actually going to talk about that a little bit in my closing remarks, but that is something that I want actually to be a focus, and that's part of my blog. That's something that it's going to be a focus on that. And this podcast has obviously been already leaning towards that, talking about the process, talking about comic creating. I'm just going to continue to do that. That's one of my big goals for this year.
That's not bad. I believe in you, man. I think you can do it. Now, I've got a few. Dear 2012, I'd like to be published. I would like to make lots of money. I would like groupies, please, 2012. Plenty of them. I don't even care what gender. By the end of 2012, please shine down on me and make sure that I have been interviewed by Playboy magazine. Thank you. No, actually, I would, to be honest, I would love to be interviewed by Playboy magazine. Their interviews are the business. But my actual resolutions are actually to get published. No, I want to use my time sharply. I want to make sure that when I sit down to write, and lists over the last little while have been really helping with this. I want to make sure that I'm hitting and checking things off. I don't want to sort of fiddle and spin my wheels. I want to make sure that I get in and I'm like, all right, I'm going to write 5 pages now. Or the more finite a goal you set, not only is it more easily attainable, but you'll be closer held to it because it doesn't feel ethereal. It's something that's concrete and definite and achievable, and I like that. So I'm going to keep setting those sorts of things and making sure that I don't want to start wavering. I've been writing for a long time now, and I'm seeing success, and it's building, and I might not have the money in groupies yet, but I can feel it all building towards there, and I cannot wait. So I just need to make sure I'm smart about the way I'm working. A big thing for 2012, though, is I want to start finalizing some projects. 2011 felt like a really big setup year where I've got a slew of pitches that are really close to being finished, and I'm just sort of working on the right publisher or the right time or the colors or the letters or something like that. I want to make sure 2012, I don't want to start looking at my bright and shiny new pitch ideas. I mean, like, that's a cool idea, and start neglecting the old ones. I want to get one. I want to break it down. I want to flog that horse till it's dead, and I want to make sure that I've tried to utilize every possible avenue to get that pitch or that project to its final station. And if its final station is to end up in my trunk and forgotten, that's fine, but I want to know before I lock it away that I gave it every possible opportunity. So that's my big thing for 2012. It's all about endings. And I also, and I mentioned it before, I want to set aside some time for some novel work this year. I've got 4 novels in the trunk, some of them heavily edited, some of them previously shopped, some of them one of them I haven't even read after finishing it. It was one that when my wife fell pregnant, the big thing that she said to me was, you need to finish writing the novel that you've written before the baby comes. And I was like, yep, that's cool, because when I'm writing a novel, it is consumptive. I didn't do anything else but write that novel. And so I did. I made her that promise, and I finished that novel with like 6 months to go. And so I realized I could probably write another novel in those 6 months. And so cheekily, I didn't tell my wife about it, and I started another novel. And it was only about, I think, 70 or 80,000 words. And I did. I finished it with probably a month to spare. But then the baby came, and, you know, life turns upside down when that happens. And I haven't even gone back and reread that novel. So I do want to spend a bit of time thinking about my novels this year and just seeing if – because I know with those, I can't lock them away because I haven't utilized – every opportunity and every avenue. And that's why I'm talking to this publisher in the States at the moment about one of them, because I believe in these things. It's just a shame that novels are so time consumptive, but I want to start setting aside a little bit of my work time to push those out. So I guess, yeah, the big thing for 2012 is, you know, finish some things, yeah, bury them if you need to, but make sure you've given it, or I've given it, a red hot go. So that's my big 2012 stuff. Jeremy, how are you going to finish this off?
Yeah, mine is obviously get more pitches published. the next one is to continue to polish my process and write faster. I would like to be able to write much faster than I am now. I also would like to tackle an idea for a novel. I've recently been pushing through the insecurity of even taking on such a task, because I did start writing one, and I just reread it a few weeks ago. I only wrote like 20 pages of it, and I read it, and it was just awful. So want to try that again. And the most important thing is to keep my positivity up and to push through setbacks and obstacles. And this isn't just writing. This is just life. I went through a pretty gut-wrenching breakup with my girlfriend, which resulted in me moving out, and you know, we have a dog together, and just all this stuff that threw my life in the way. And it's been taking me a while to get to pick the pieces up and get back on the horse. I don't think I'm working at full steam right now. So, you know, little things like the juxtaposed publishing thing was a nice way to bring in the new year. But I am still trying to sort out my like new routine which is completely foreign to me at this point. So, but yeah, just staying positive. And you know, I do want to thank you guys because these chats help me recenter, refocus, and see that, you know, what I'm doing isn't in a vacuum, that, you know, people actually read it or care about it or are interested. So, yeah.
Damn straight. That I concur 100%, man. This thing is, it's affirming. I really dig that about this podcast, even just being in it. And I hope we have that effect for people listening to it, that it's all about just, yeah, keep working, guys. And I mean, I mentioned it to the other day on Facebook page. It gets a bit of chatter. I'm really impressed with the people logging onto Facebook and having a bit of a chat on the process page.
Yeah, it's been, I think we have a lot to be proud about. And 2011 was a great start for us. We've had some great guests and we've talked about a lot of great topics. So, you know, 2012, I think it's going to be even better. So I'm really excited about it. Well, I guess maybe we should, before I finalize everything here and we sign off for this episode, just give a shout out to the imageaddiction.net folks for continuing to host our podcast and being a real great support for what we're trying to do here. And to all the fans, thanks for listening. And we're hoping 2012 is a great year. We're really excited. And with that, I'm going to lead us off. 2012. It's the start of new year, so it can mean all kinds of things to all kinds of people. Find a better job, meet someone new, stop smoking, stop being a goddamn fatty. When I entered into 2011, I had achieved a huge goal of being published with Image Comics, and that was always a major dream that I'd strive for since setting out to write in the comic industry. And I'd resolved to do everything I could to get my name out in the world by whatever means possible. So I can look back on 2011 with satisfaction. What needs to be said is that with that satisfaction, I have to press forward. I can't simply just rest on my laurels. A writing career is a long journey, and no matter where you find yourself on its path, you must realize that all successes need to be followed up with a stronger drive to do more and to do better. That's what a new start to a new year means. Look back, survey the landscape of 2011, and reflect on what you've achieved. And I can assure you, if you worked hard at moving forward as a writer or an artist, you have made progress. You will have tightened up your creative process, you'll have made new connections, and learned something valuable about your craft. 2012 is my year, just like 2011 was. I will write more, I will read more, and I will meet a pile of new people who I can learn from and hopefully offer some insight in return. Whatever your starting position may be on the road to becoming a comic creator, know that it's a few miles further along than it was in 2011. And that year after year spent pursuing your passion is all part of your progress. It's all just part of the process.